Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here talking to people who do many more interesting and direct things with the world. You guys actually want to see a black hole. We are just theorists, but we have also actually been making progress. Sometimes from outside it might look like the theorists can't seem to agree on anything. But over the past 40 years or so, we have made some concrete progress in understanding the theoretical issues involved with black holes. And today I would like to give you a very rough summary of what we have been finding. So here's an outline of the talk. I'll first tell you about the paradox that Hawking raised in 1974, which set off a big firestorm for the theorists. As you might have seen in the press around 2004, Hawking did a sort of retraction and said, well, I don't think it's a problem after all. So I'll tell you why he said that. But it turned out this argument of his retraction wasn't correct. A theorem was proved in 2009, which showed the reason for his retraction was actually incorrect. So you're back in full strength to the paradox. And in the process, the paradox became a rigorous theorem. You could not bypass it. So you have a real problem. Now, string theory being a theory of quantum gravity shouldn't have a real problem, otherwise it would fail. I'll tell you what seems to be the solution in string theory. And the solution seems to be that black holes actually have a structure called a fuzzball structure. So I'll explain to you what that is. Then recently, people have been asking the question, OK, if you do have some structure of the black hole at the horizon, maybe a fuzzball or something else like that, when you hit that, would you feel that you actually get a firewall? Would you burn up as you try to fall through the horizon? But in fact, I'll point out this argument is doesn't have to be correct. There's a flaw in it, because there's a notion called fuzzball complementarity, which would tell you that you actually might not see anything as you fall through the horizon. So it's a jumble of conceptual ideas, but we'll just spend maybe a couple of slides on each and try to get an outline of what the whole theory is. So let's begin with the information paradox. And the idea is very simple. In quantum mechanics, the vacuum has fluctuations. So out of the vacuum, you can produce an electron-positron pair, and after a while, it'll annihilate back and go to the vacuum. So that's the vacuum bubbling all around us all the time. And as long as the energy of the fluctuation, maybe mc squared plus mc squared, times the time for which the fluctuation lasts, delta t, is less than order h bar, that's OK. That's what quantum mechanics tells us. But if you do the same thing near a black hole horizon, there also you have vacuum fluctuations, then because the gravitational potential of the black hole is negative, minus gmm over r, a particle in here can have a net negative energy. And in that case, because this has a net positive, this is a net negative, you get fluctuations whose total energy is zero. And therefore, in fact, they live for infinite time. They become on shell. And in fact, these particles don't re-annihilate. They just stay there forever. The particle outside, in fact, floats out and becomes Hawking radiation. And so particle pairs are continuously created at the horizon. So that's the big discovery of Hawking in 1974. So the black hole slowly keeps shrinking, and these particles keep accumulating. And when the black hole comes near the end point of its evaporated life, you actually have a problem. And the problem has to do with the idea of entanglement. Because if you produce these two particles, maybe this was an electron, this was a positron, there's an equal amplitude for the fluctuation to have, maybe the positron inside and the electron outside. So you get a kind of an entangled state. This particle outside doesn't have a definite state by itself. You can't say you are an electron or you are a positron. This guy is an electron if the other guy is a positron. This is a positron if the other guy is an electron. Of course, there's nothing wrong about that. We have entangled states. I write it schematically like this. We have entangled states all the time in quantum mechanics. But this is the point here. Radiation doesn't have a state by itself. Only the total combined thing of this and this has any state at all. But now the amount of entanglement you can see is very large, because each time you do this, if you produce n particles, there are two n possible states. These could all be electrons, and these would all be positrons. Or you know, some could be electron-positron in some sequence. This would be the reverse sequence. You can see there are 2 to the n states like this. And the total wave function is not a simple product of a wave function of particles outside times particles inside. It's heavily entangled, a sum of many such products with 2 to the n pieces. So it's very heavily entangled. Well, this is the crux of the problem, because now what happens when the black hole reaches the end point of evaporation? There are two possibilities. Possibility A, which was suggested by Hawking in 1975, it's that the black hole completely disappears, and there's a vacuum there. But now you have a problem. What state do you attribute to all these objects? They don't have any one of these particular states, because it had this state if the guy here had a corresponding mirror state. So if you don't have this guy existing at all, then this guy doesn't have any state, and you have violated quantum mechanics. It can only be described by a density matrix. You start with something which had a state. The star which made the black hole was in some state of all the atoms. But at the end of it, you're left with something which can't have any state at all. Now, nobody liked this very much because we all want to believe that quantum mechanics is true. So the possibility B was sort of popular and is still popular with many people doing GR, which is that after the black hole reaches Planck size, it doesn't evaporate any further. You would call that a remnant. But that's not very satisfying either, because now the remnant has to have a large number of internal states, 2 to the n. But n could be as big as you want, because you could start from bigger and bigger black hole and then evaporate down to the Planck size remnant. But now you have a puzzle. How can you hold an unbounded number of states inside a Planck volume and energy just given by equal to Planck mass? Because normally in physics, if I limit both the volume and the energy, the amount of phase space is bounded. Just order one in this case, you would think. But in fact, you have to hold an arbitrary amount of data in there. So one suggestion has been that you actually have a baby universe inside this Planck size remnant. In there, the whole baby universe, and that's where all this data goes and hides. The problem, though, is that in string theory, there don't seem to be any baby universes. If you ask for all the states which have mass, one Planck mass or lower, we think we know them. You can quantize the string. There are only so many states, a few number, maybe 10, and that's it. So in string theory, this wouldn't be an out. Well, so what's the situation with Hawking in 2004? One belief that he had, in fact, he was convinced by an argument which was first aired by Maldacena, when Maldacena came at it from the string theory side, and there, if you don't have remnants, well, what is the solution? You want to have no information loss because you want quantum mechanics, of course, and you can't have any remnants. The belief was that perhaps you can have a cumulative effect of small corrections. So what does that mean? So we said you can produce an electron, positron, positron, electron, like entangled state like this, but of course there can always be a small correction. It could come from anywhere, maybe gravitational instantons. You don't really have to worry where it comes from. Could be very small, maybe exponentially small. But the point is, number of quanta which you radiate, of course, is very large by the time the black hole evaporates. So is it possible that a small correction at every step, somehow multiplied by the large number of quanta that you radiate, would give you a situation where the particles outside are not entangled with what is left behind? Then there is no problem. What's left behind can disappear into the vacuum, and you don't have any violation of quantum mechanics. So in a cartoon set, here it is. This is the basic entanglement of an electron with its corresponding positron. But if there were small entanglements of everything with everything else, then if you try to make a division here in your mind and say, I want the entanglement of this side with this side, maybe after you take into account all these dotted lines, there are so many of them because there are so many particles, these subleading effects, corrections to Hawking radiation, would basically remove the entanglement, and then there is no problem. So perhaps with all these corrections, the entanglement goes down to zero between here and here, and then there is no problem. Of course, if this were true, there were no problem in the first place. You're simply saying that Hawking did a leading order calculation, and the moment you do subleading corrections, it's all gone. So in 2004, Hawking surrendered his bet to John Preskill. He paid him off with a set of sports encyclopedias, saying maybe the small corrections take care of everything. This was the language he used, almost the same thing, but he phrased it slightly differently. But Kip Thorne, who was the co-signer on the bet he took along with Preskill, these guys were saying information would be lost. He was saying it probably won't be lost, though I don't know how. But Kip Thorne refused to pay up, saying, hey, you haven't shown me anything, I refuse to pay. So what's going on? How come people can't even agree on whether Hawking proved something or didn't? Well, actually, he never proved anything. He just said the small corrections might be able to fix the problem. They are enough in number that I don't want to worry about the problem anymore. But then in 2009, an inequality was proved using something called the strong subadditivity of quantum entanglement entropy. It's a rather non-trivial theorem proved by these people in the theory in quantum information theory. So all the power is here. But if you apply it to the Hawking evaporation problem, you can actually prove that if your corrections were order epsilon to each evaporation, the fractional reduction in the entanglement you get actually does not accumulate. If the corrections were order, let's say, 1%, the maximum reduction you can get in the entanglement is 2%. So in fact, this retraction of Hawking was not correct. And in fact, you have the whole problem in full glory. You're still stuck with the information problem. You either lose quantum mechanics, or you lose remnants, or you somehow have to corrupt the information, the whole Hawking radiation problem. So here was the summary of what happened. The old argument Hawking in 1974 is now sort of a theorem because it's now stable against all small corrections. You prove to all orders with any correction, doesn't matter where the corrections come from. And so this is the situation we are stuck with. Suppose you give me that the evolution of low energy modes, let's say wavelength 1 meter to 10 kilometers, where let's take a solar mass black hole of 3 kilometer radius. Suppose physics of low energies at the horizon, nowhere near singularity, just away from the singularity, from let's say halfway in the black hole to outside. In there, if you look at any physics of 1 meter, 10 kilometer, And suppose the evolution of these modes is normal, what you expect from normal quantum field theory in the lab, up to small corrections. Small correction means going to zero as the black hole is taken to be bigger. Okay? Then you must either have information loss or you must have randomness. So this is now you can prove as a rigorous theorem. And now you can see it's something you clearly have to worry about. Because the problem is that in usual gravity, we have a theorem black holes have no hair. You just get the Schwarzschild metric. Then, of course, this is all empty space. And this is empty space. These modes do travel in the normal way. These modes will never have any problem. You're not even asking about any Planck scale physics. It's just ordinary physics. And in that case, you will either lose quantum mechanics, which string theory cannot handle, or you will get remnants, which also string theory doesn't have. So what is the answer in string theory? We need an answer. And here the answer is interesting. It is something called fuzzballs. Just to motivate what happens here, just consider first a rough analogy. So in 1982, Witten proposed something called a bubble of nothing, which was the following idea. Maybe some of you have heard about this. So if you take Minkowski space here, this is 3 plus 1 space-time just drawn as a line. But suppose you had an extra compact direction. So you went 4 plus 1 dimensions rather than 3 plus 1. This space-time, even though it looks completely normal, it's just an extra circle there, it's actually unstable. It's unstable to what? It's unstable tunneling into a bubble of nothing. If you imagine this like a drinking straw, what can happen is the straw can pinch off from here, close off here, close off here. You lose this part of the straw, just cut it and throw it away. This is now a smooth manifold. If you come this way, you'll just go back here. If you come this way, you'll just go back here. And this region is not even part of space-time. And this gap that you create, it's unstable for tunneling from this to this, and then the hole just keeps increasing and increasing, and the whole space is destabilized. So that was a one-dimensional picture, but if you have many dimensions, you make, like, say, in the middle of this room, entire hole, which is not part of space-time. The compact dimension coming from here like a drinking straw comes here and pinches off like a cigar, and so, of course, there's no place to go beyond that. And that happens from all the angular directions, and the thing inside is called a bubble of nothing. It's now a smooth compact manifold, but its bubble keeps expanding and expanding, reaching asymptotic the speed of light, and that's why the Kaluza-Klein compactification was unstable. It wasn't a big worry because it turns out the fermions don't have a good boundary condition when you cap it off. The fermions always become single on a manifold which has a cigar shape. So even though it was there, people didn't do much with it. But something similar happens in the black hole in string theory. So in string theory, we have just a basic set of objects. We have strings, brains, some kind of stuff. If you want to make a black hole, the process is simple. You collect a lot of these together, maybe a million of them. And the coupling constant is tunable. If you make the coupling very weak, you just have a million strings. You can put in a computer, do what you like. And if you make the coupling strong, coupling includes gravitational coupling. There's only one coupling in string theory. You expect you'd get a black hole. You'll get a big horizon and so on. And people thought the string would shrink to zero, to the origin there, and a big the gravitational radius of this will come up, and you'll get a black hole. But it turns out, well, now it's a well-defined problem. It's just a technical problem in string theory. Take a million strings and brains and whatnot. At weak coupling, now crank up the coupling and just tell me what is the nature of the wave function. Is it indeed like this? And you find the answer is no. If you, at weak coupling, suppose you now again take 1D space-time, and in fact, there are compact dimensions. Because string theory lives in 10 dimensions, you have 6 compact dimensions. I've drawn one of them like a cylinder, like a cigar, a straw here, one compact dimension. So if nothing happened, as if physics was as normal, you'd again form a horizon here and here. And of course, compact dimensions have been known to physicists for since 1918. Nothing very bizarre about that. But and so people just always ignored them by saying they'll just do nothing, just float around everywhere, factored away. But in fact, that's not what happens. If you put some strings here and increase the coupling, what happens is you again develop a hole in the middle. This guy pinches off here, this guy pinches off here. This time, there's actually, it's not a spherically symmetric pinching. There's an angular twist, which makes the topology here something called a Kaluza-Klein monopole, which could be either a plus charge or a minus charge. And with that extra twist, the fermion actually has a completely fine boundary condition. It had to, because in string theory, of course, there are fermions. And so if you look at the whole picture in a higher dimensional perspective, when you start, if I put some brains and strings in the middle of this room, and I crank up the coupling, it's not like I develop a horizon around it. As I increase the coupling, a hole starts tearing up in the space. As I come, the compact dimensions come to this from any angular side, it comes near the boundary of this hole. This hole is the size of the horizon. As they come just to the outside of the horizon, the compact dimensions pinches off, so space-time basically ends. At every angular location, the pinch-off could be either a plus or a minus sign. So if you have roughly, if you break it up into cells of Planck's size each, then you have 1 bit per Planck area, which is where the entropy of the black hole comes from. So all the possible states of the black hole are given by coming, by making this, removing the part of the horizon which is inside, just coming at it from outside from every compact dimensions come, and they pinch off with either a twist to the right or to the left, you call it a plus or a minus. Doing that at every Planck circle, the compact dimension is a Planck scale, all the spin off is at Planck scale. So as you come from various sides, at every Planck cell on the surface, you have roughly 1 bit degree of freedom, and that's all the states of the black hole that you want. That's the Bekenstein entropy. So first of all, proposal is that all the states have this topology. You have no state which actually has a smooth interior. All the states which have been made so far of various kinds, in string theory, normally start with extremal black holes which have charge, and you go to near extremal black holes. Some special cases with no charge have been done. We can't do all states of all black holes. For example, we can't do a Schwarzschild black hole and make all the states. For very simple black holes, we can make all the states, and they are all of this kind. So in string theory, everything which has been tried, just a technical problem, you put some strings there, you crank up the coupling, look at the wave function. Is it point-like with vacuum around it, or does it swell up, create a hole inside, and live out there? Well, it's the latter. So the first of all, proposal just says that you'll never get this situation. You always get this. So here I've drawn this pinched off thing, the pluses and minuses, the little KK monopoles. And this part is not really part of space-time at all. So the black hole microstates live in a different topology from what we normally thought of as the topology of a black hole in ordinary space. So the compact dimensions are very important. They come and make a non-trivial fiber bundle in a different topology over the non-compact dimensions. And the space-time, therefore, naturally ends just outside the horizon. And there's actually no interior. And there is no horizon. Well, so what's this thing you might have heard about in the press recently called a firewall? So in a sense, I think people got very confused about what the firewall thing was saying, in case you did read about it in the New York Times and other places. In some sense, it was basically restating what Hawking's old theorem was. Because what did Hawking tell us? We said Hawking showed us that if the low-energy physics is normal, which Hawking did assume, then you'll have, because the evaporation proceeds to the end, you'll either have information loss or remnants. That's exactly the same statement as saying, if you don't want information loss or remnants, then you cannot have normal physics at leading order to the horizon. So you can't have a smooth horizon, because Hawking showed you, if you have a smooth horizon, you'll have the problem. So you have to corrupt the horizon, otherwise you can't solve the problem. So in a sense, Hawking's old theorem was exactly equal to saying, there has to be stuff there. If there's stuff there, if you fall in, you might hit it. Well, let's just call that the firewall. So up to here, this was just the old Hawking stuff. So in fact, nothing has been done. But now you have to ask, what's the mechanism and nature of this corruption that you need at the horizon to help you? Like in the first ball case, we have a mechanism. Space-time ended here with this new topology. But there have been other proposals. For example, Giddings has proposed that all high-energy modes could be normal, but modes of the order of the Hawking wavelength, which is like 3 kilometers for a Schwarzschild black hole, there might be some so far unknown gentle non-local effects that change the Hawking radiation somehow as it escapes the black hole and gets rid of the problem. If that were true, of course, then in fact, by doing things of the kind that you guys are doing, making measurements on the black hole, then you'll be able to find alterations to the physics around 4M, maybe, which you can see. So this is now in the domain of things where you can really start distinguishing it. You either have to change the physics sharply at the horizon, or if you don't want to change it sharply at the horizon, you could smooth it out, but then you'll see changes at 4M, 6M, somewhere over there. So people have these other proposals too. What did these people who did the firewall argument actually do? Here are their names up there. They said that suppose you want physics to be normal all the way up to maybe a small distance from the horizon, maybe Planck length. Then if you just look at the same argument of Hawking, you find that in that case, you can't just smooth out this region here and say the non-localities over here will take care of it. If you have normal physics up to within epsilon, and here you say, I don't know what happens, then symmetrically on the other side of the horizon, you'll have to corrupt the modes of wavelength epsilon. So if you say the physics is normal outside the black hole up to Planck length, then in fact, just as you cross the horizon, you'll find Planck scale excitations in there. And the reason for that is clear, right? Because Hawking modes came off from these little particle pairs near the horizon, and then they became real pairs. Well, so if you are going to have normal physics over here, if this guy is normal, you've got to screw up this guy. Otherwise, you can't really escape. So they were just saying that, OK, Hawking's argument told us there is stuff at the horizon. And so when we fall in there, if you don't want to have remnants and so on, which you don't find in string theory, then won't you feel that when you fall in there, that you will be burned? It turns out up to here, everything is true, but this part is not necessarily true. And that's the last thing I want to show you. So that's my last couple of slides here. How can it be that there's stuff there? For example, in a first ball, space-time actually ended there. So if you fall onto it, you'll smash, break into pieces, and you're done for. How come I'm saying it's possible that you actually feel nothing? And here's the idea. It's the idea which goes back to something that Susskind was proposing in a somewhat different way many years ago. But this is a modification because the old thing Susskind proposing actually didn't work. That was the goal of the firewall paper of these people. But in fact, we had a proposal slightly different one some years back, which does not suffer from the firewall argument. And the underlying idea is this. It's the idea of duality, which comes up a lot of time in string theory, including in AdS CFT duality. Suppose here's a horizon, and a high-energy graviton is falling onto it. Okay? Now, if you had just nothing at the horizon like you normally think in ordinary GR, of course, you'll just go through, and there'll be a wave here, and the radially going in waves have some kind of a spectrum, and you can solve the wave equation, radial wave equation. It has some frequencies and some degeneracies at those frequencies. Now, if you have a fuzzball, you just have a surface and space-time ends here. Well, if you fall into a fuzzball, you simply wiggle the fuzzball surface. It's going to excite waves on the surface. If you fall at this point on the fuzzball surface, you just excite like a water drop with waves going here. But now suppose it were true that you can't even go in. There's no in, right? You just excite the fuzzball surface. But suppose the spectrum of these waves was identical to the spectrum of radial modes falling into the black hole. Then can you ever tell the difference? So this is what duality is. You have one system which has a certain spectrum. You have a completely different physical system which has the same spectrum. And if two systems have the same spectrum, in fact, you really can't distinguish them. It's a map of all the vectors in the Hilbert space of one to all the vectors in the Hilbert space of the other, and you can't really say that you're not smoothly falling in. So this was the idea of duality. It was motivated by a similar thing which happened in AdS CFT, but you have to note it can't be an exact duality, because this is how all the problems now, I would believe, are going to be solved in string theory. We said that the fuzzball surface will have to be slightly different for different microstates. All those pluses and minuses were different at different places, so that's why different surfaces radiate differently, and that's how the information of the black hole comes out. The whole information paradox came in Hawking's time, because if the horizon was a vacuum, then you produce pairs from the vacuum, and they carry no information. But now that problem is solved. But if you impacted energy is much bigger than T, that's very easy to do, because the temperature of a black hole is equal to the radius of the black hole. It's very low. Then the waves that you excite on them are almost the same. You can hardly tell the difference. And this universal oscillation that you get at high energies, that's what corresponds to me trying to fall in, because I'm at energy much bigger than T. Then the oscillations are universal, and the conjecture of fuzzball complementarity is that this spectrum of oscillations is the same as the spectrum of radial modes falling inside the black hole. And in that case, you cannot tell. So here's my summary slide, and then I'm done. If you don't want the information problem, and if you don't want to violate quantum mechanics, and you don't want remnants, we now have a theorem that you must corrupt the physics at the horizon by order unity. There's nothing you can do about it. You've got to beat the no-hair theorem. In string theory, it happens automatically, because here's a theory. It doesn't have remnants. It doesn't violate quantum mechanics. It had to do something. And when we took the states of brains and we looked at what they did, just a technical problem, we find the whole thing blows up like a bubble, and it never actually makes a horizon, so you never get the vacuum pair production. And so that's how string theory takes care of it. There's a possibility of fuzzball complementarity. We cannot prove this, but the idea here would be that in some sense, the classical physics comes back to you. It comes back to you only at energies much bigger than T, which is not a big threshold. T is 3 kilometer wavelength for a Schwarzschild black hole. But if you throw something on it at energy, let's say 100 times KT, which is 3 centimeter wavelength, then in one description, you would just say it goes in. But whatever the spectrum of modes falling into the black hole is actually the same as the spectrum of vibrations of the fuzzball. So in fact, the spectrum of the whole physics of infall is just mapped directly into the physics of the fluctuations. And in that sense, if you fell onto the fuzzball surface, it might be that you never know up to these errors of E over KT. So if E is 100 KT, there'd be a 1% error, and the rest would be exactly as before. So it's a bizarre, I'll just end here, it's a bizarre set of ideas, but string theory seems to be leading us in these directions. This part is a conjecture, we don't know. If this is true, there's no firewall feeling. Firewall people just said, since the structure has to be here, you must feel it. But here you do feel it, but you feel it in a very definite way. And a definite way is a dual way, that you exactly map onto all the spectrum here, map to spectrum here. And then in a sense, you actually cannot tell that you actually broke up into these fluctuations. But I think this is the lesson that is the most solid. If you don't believe in string theory, you won't have this. But this one is certainly now clear, that if you don't do anything if you don't corrupt physics to order unity at the horizon, you cannot actually solve the information problem without having remnants. Now, in many theories, you can have remnants, and there's no problem with that then. But remnants also have their own issues, as I mentioned. So if you want to do remnants, you have to deal with those issues. And otherwise, you have to corrupt the horizon. And string theory seems to happen automatically. I'll stop here. Thank you.
Question?
Suppose you are falling in the supermassive black hole. So your tidal forces, your experience is approximately the same as we experience here sitting in the room.
That's right.
So now take limit when mass of the black hole goes to infinity, you come to the Rydler horizon.
Yes.
So it's flat space time. Yes. Does it have this fuzzy structure, fuzzball structure or not?
Yeah, no, that's a very good question. Why did semi-classical approximation or our semi-classical intuition get violated so badly when the black hole could be so big that it almost certainly looks very semi-classical? And the reason is very simple. It has to all do with the Bekenstein entropy. Because as you know, the Bekenstein entropy is given by the area of the black hole in Planck units. So if you compute the number of states which come from there, e to the s, it's an abnormally large number. We know the entropy of a black hole is much more than the entropy of any normal gas with the same mass. And the numbers actually are very interesting. If you look at the actual action for, let's say, classical collapse from 4m down to m, when the black hole is forming, you just write the action by integrating r root minus g, and you put in a path integral, e to the minus the action. Then you look at the entropy, which gives you the degeneracy of states, the measure in the path integral, which is of order e to the Bekenstein entropy, s Bekenstein. And you find they're exactly the same order. So it's very interesting that if you have a very large degeneracy of states in a system, what happens is the amplitude for this collapsing black hole to tunnel into any one of these fuzzball states, this kind of instability I mentioned where you pinch off into this bubble, the amplitude is very small. It's e to the minus a classical action, and the classical action is huge because, you know, it's an astrophysical thing going to a big thing. But the probability for tunneling into any one of these structures is small. You have to multiply by e to the s Bekenstein, the Bekenstein entropy, to find the amplitude tunnel into any one of them. And you find the numbers exactly cancel. The number e to the s Bekenstein is exactly the reciprocal of e to the minus the action, up to factors of order one, which we don't know how to fix. And so that's why the black hole is not a classical problem. We always knew the Bekenstein entropy was very big, but we could never do anything with it because we didn't know what it was counting. Now we see the states here, and we find it completely makes the whole thing not classical.